Hello and welcome to the Nat Coombs Show on ESPN in association with Betfred. Good to have you with us, gang. And we are down to four. The championship games coming up this week. We're going to look back on how Buffalo, Kansas City, the Green Bay Packers, and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers have made it to be the last teams standing. What a weekend of divisional football. All four games, different in their own right. All four had intriguing elements to them. Who better than Greg Brady to break them on down and get you up to speed with everything that you need to know. So let's get this show on the road. Greg Brady, so much to get into. Breeze's last hurrah. The Packers looking formidable. The Bills, two games away from exercising the Scott Norwood ghost. And who'd have thought that Chad Henne would be the name on everybody's lips? Great to see him back in primetime.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, you wander down the street sometimes or you're at the grocery store and you're dealing with these difficult times, Nat, and sometimes it pops into your head. How many of the 32 backup quarterbacks in the NFL do I know and could I name? But he is one. Him playing a factor and Jameis Winston playing a factor. If we go down the list and we get to Tennessee and then we think about, well, the Chargers, yeah, because Tyrod Taylor started. But it'd be a great random game show. Name that backup quarterback from a specific year or a legendary team as well. So I think you and I could market that and get the board game rights at some point.
I love it.
Because we're all looking for more board games. This name that backup quarterback seems ideal to me.
Have you got any Chad Henne Dolphins merch from back in the day?
No, yeah. I mean, I was famously out on Ryan Tannehill. I was never truly a fan, as it's been well documented. But Henne's in that sort of Chad, like I feel like he was backing up Chad Pennington.
He was, and that's then, right. Yeah, yeah.
Tyler Thigpen was in the mix. I know I did a TV game or a radio game with Neil Reynolds, and it was Miami and Tennessee, and it was Randy Moss making his Titans debut. So we chose the game. We sort of, bum rushed the boss, if you will, and said, well, we've got to do Titans Dolphins. I mean, we wanted a trip to Miami. We didn't want to go to the Meadowlands or Philadelphia when you can go to Miami in November. So we made it very clear this was a critical game to go to. And in that game, Henne got hurt, Pennington got hurt, and I believe Tyler Thigpen came in and got the win in relief. Might have been his only Dolphin win. I can't promise you that.
I've done a Tyler Thigpen game live as well, actually, in Minnesota, in New Orleans, a Minnesota-New Orleans game, although I might be getting him mixed up with Gus Frerotte then as well. I'll have to deep dive there. That is for another day. Let's start with...
I will tell you, I did Gus Frerotte's playoff start with the Detroit Lions. Did make the playoffs between 99 and 2011. And Gus Frerotte went back to Washington and started for the Lions with an injured Charlie Batch. And I was there, that's late 99 going into 2000. That might be early 2000, around January 7th. And the Lions, remember, Barry Sanders had retired the previous year. So we're all like, this Lions team's going to be terrible. Somehow they were 8-8, made the playoffs. They were 9-7 and missed the year before. Then they go 8-8 and make the playoffs. And that's a couple of years. That might have been Gus Frerotte's first game back, Nat, after the season in which he banged his helmet into the wall because he was so happy. Big mistake.
You know what? This is definitely an off-season show. We're going to follow the trajectories of backups from the last 20 years, see where they've landed, see where they go, see if we remember those eras. Chad Henne, it's a great story. We'll talk about that game, of course. Talk about all four of the divisional round games. Now we know the championship. Now we know Brady is back in another championship game. Extraordinary career just rolls on and on. A similarly extraordinary career for Drew Brees seems to have come to an end. And in a way, when you're such a great player, such a strong-minded player, everything that Brees has overcome, the adversity in his career, injury, of course, rejection, bouncing into New Orleans, a city that was in complete recovery mode, of course, after Katrina, and his emotional connection as a result with the city, with the team, with Sean Payton, all of this that he has been through, and Super Bowl win being the absolute high point of his career, to go out like this, Greg, to go out like this is, he'll recover in time, of course, and he'll bounce back in time. But it was a shame to see that he didn't go out swinging.
Now, it really is. I was thinking yesterday, it's sort of one of the, not many get to pick their own ending in the quarterbacking business. You don't get a big retirement tour. You can't play all your hits and then, go off triumphantly to it's not the music scene, and it's not, that last great movie role. So, yeah, it reminded me of a few demises. I mean, we were talking about the Dolphins. Dan Marino won a playoff game the previous week in Seattle, had a lot of help from his defense, but he had to bring the Dolphins from behind. They go and play a stacked Jacksonville team that were the one seed that year in the 99 season. And you remember the scoreline, 62-7. And they pulled Marino halfway through the third quarter for Damon Heward. And if anything, I will say there were games in my recollection that season. That was my first real year on the NFL beat where I'm at stadiums every week and traveling with the Lions and all that. And my recollection is Damon Heward won some games that year with Marino out. A little like how Brock Osweiler helped Peyton Manning. So everybody wants the Peyton Manning ending, right? You know, even though the arm strength is gone, you're still smart and savvy, like Breeze is and like Marino was. But, your defense kind of helps carry you to the title. You don't make mistakes, and Peyton Manning made very few mistakes in three playoff games when he got the job back from Brock Osweiler. But I made the point to you on Sunday, I don't know that the Broncos make the playoffs without Brock Osweiler stepping in and winning games. Peyton Manning, I want to say, when he stepped away in that 2015 season and was injured, was the lowest rated quarterback, if not one of the lowest rated quarterbacks in the league at that particular point in time. To get to leave a Super Bowl hero, it's John Elway being carried off after they beat the Falcons. It's same uniform, Peyton Manning. But for 9 out of 10 legendary quarterbacks, they really don't get to call their shot. And we were never going to see Drew Brees as a backup. I'm not denigrating those like Warren Moon and Randall Cunningham and many amazing quarterbacks. Michael Vick was a backup at a bunch of different places the last 4 or 5 years. But that's not how it was going to go for Drew Brees. So, yeah, his retirement does appear imminent. But at the same time, it was rough. It was a rough watch at times seeing him try to move the ball downfield. I mean, Troy Aikman's trying to be, you got to do your job as a commentator, but you could tell at times as a former quarterback where it all also ended very suddenly for him with an injury. Right. I think he was thinking about Brees, like, I don't want to dig in too deep, but he did have to keep referencing the fact, Nat, that he couldn't throw the ball 20 yards down the field. They took no shots down the field. There was all underneath stuff, all screen passes, all checkdowns for Brees, and it caught up with New Orleans, plus the turnovers that the Tom Brady just didn't make.
He Brady
made in this playoff so far. It was rough for Drew Brees.
The turnovers were obviously instrumental, and it's interesting that Brees hasn't had the deep ball for a while now. We've known this. It's been, I think, misappropriated, that criticism, to Brady, for example, this season, when he demonstrably still has. He's inaccurate with it a fair bit, but he still got it. There are certain quarterbacks, Rivers as well. It's fading. Brees, we've known this all season long, so it came as no surprise. But of course, they couldn't get that short game going, couldn't get the underneath game going. Michael Thomas was anonymous in the game, which was surprising, although there's a lot to that story, I think, that's going to come out. I know there's been injury, but there's all kinds of other stuff surrounding that for sure. It's interesting you mentioned that Marino game, because benched when the game was already away from them, but still you're benching one of the all-time greats in that kind of situation. This game was much closer, and of course Jameis came in and was a pinch hitter when they needed that deep ball. But was there ever any chance that Brees would have been benched in this? Is there an argument to say that if Sean Payton had made a change, then this game would have ended differently?
Yeah, I absolutely think that's the case. I think the Saints had a better chance to win. I think we realized that maybe a quarter and a half in. And maybe it was even before the Jameis Winston touchdown when he came in. And it's so funny because it took a little while as well for them to show the replay of the Bears-Saints game the previous week, where the Bears had done the exact same play drawn up. And it was done perfectly by Mitch Trubisky and then dropped in the end zone, obviously. Does it make a difference? Do the Bears come from behind and beat the Saints? Likely not, but they were a little overmatched. But yeah, I thought about that several times yesterday, and I thought if Brees is just a little bit less the living legend than he is, I really think he'd have to feel, my arm's tugging at me. He'd have to go to Sean Payton, Nat, and say, you know what, put the other guy in.
Right.
And the pride and the ego, and I don't mean that in a negative way, but nobody watching likes to think if they know what they're good at, nobody likes to think, well, that guy's just sitting around. He can do what I do. You know, that happens in our business. So there's some moves that you watch from afar that don't even affect you. And you go, well, that makes sense. He's a really good up and coming broadcaster. That makes sense. He's a legend as a broadcaster. But the moves can be pretty controversial sometimes. So nobody wants to look around and say, that guy can do what I do better. Get him in front of a microphone right now, or get him in politics right now. And I'll just step aside as an MP. Like the human brain just doesn't work that way. Not in the heat of the moment. Drew Brees kept thinking, I can bring us back. And if I'm not injured, then I'm the best chance to win. But you're not, sometimes you're just not objective about yourself. Right. I wouldn't have expected it. I'm not blaming him for not doing it. But yeah, I don't know how it didn't occur to Sean Payton more, and it may have, to utilize Jameis Winston just a touch more. Remember also what we talked about on Sunday, the absence of Taysom Hill was big in this game. And maybe it was bigger than we even thought on some of the short plays, on some of the gadget and hitch plays where they could use Hill as a wideout or just send him up the middle on third and one, or they didn't really come into a fourth and one play where Brees had to scramble for. They might have done once. But yeah, Taysom Hill's absence, as well as the backup running back to Alvin Kamara, those both factored in.
Yeah, no doubt. And it's a great point you make in terms of the psyche. It's self-perpetuating to get to where he's got to have, as I opened the show with, to have overcome all those different challenges. It is fundamental to that mindset, that psyche, that there is a piece fundamental to that. This is not going to go away. In a situation like this, you're not going to throw the towel in. You're not going to, and Peyton's never going to bench him as well because of their connection. I wonder if this was a head coach that had been at New Orleans for the latter stages of Brees' career, still obviously had a relationship with, but not of the same kind, whether that might have had he might have had a different perspective, but it's unlikely.
I mean, even for a lesser quarterback like Eli Manning, look at that. A few years ago, Giants are going nowhere, a two-time Super Bowl champ, a consideration for the Hall of Fame, and their season is going down the toilet. Do they want to play a younger player? Do they want to play somebody who they might be able to develop into a quarterback? And I think it was Geno Smith on the roster at the time. They did it 1 week, and the owner basically stormed downstairs and said, don't do that to Eli Manning. Like, that's how serious those kind of conversations are. I'd go back to Denver and I'd say, can John Fox really look Peyton Manning in the eye and go, I know you're healthy now, I know you've recovered from your injury, but we're going to ride it out in your last year with Brock Osweiler in the playoffs. You can't do that. It just, there's an etiquette scenario, and obviously Denver didn't make the wrong move. They won the damn Super Bowl.
Let's talk about the Bucs D. And the credit they should get in this as well, because Brees was misfiring. As we talked about, his deep ball not there. His average is 3.9 yards attempt. Incidentally, they couldn't get the ground game going at all. And some of this, of course, is down to individual and collective shortcomings from the Saints offense. But a lot of it is down to the excellence of the Bucs D, the excellence of Todd Bowles, who is going to be completely in demand now. Of course, in terms of the remaining vacancies, we'll talk head coaching spots a bit later on in the show. So credit where credit is due. If neither offense was particularly on song last night, the Bucs D was the critical factor.
I thought so. Yeah, I agree with that. We're not going to mistake this Tampa Bay. This is the first year they've won a playoff game, and now they've won two. This is the first time since that 0-2 Super Bowl team where you're going, well, that guy's going to the Hall of Fame. So is that guy. Mm-hmm. That guy is also maybe that guy. Like, we're not mistaking them for Warren Sapp, Rondae Barber, John Lynch, Hardy Nickerson. That's one of the great defenses, honestly, one of the five or six great defenses to ever play in the playoffs. And they got to stay together as a core for years in a row, which is harder and harder to do now. Yeah, they had a salary cap 18 years ago, but it's tougher to do now. This is a little more no name, although a couple of the names that I thought really played well yesterday are really familiar names. They isolated and you know, you wouldn't have noticed the quiet work he was doing if you were just sort of glancing back and forth. But, you know, I mentioned my ties in Detroit earlier on. I moved from Detroit to Toronto right when they drafted Dominique Suh. And I looked and he was a savior in Detroit. Also, you know, a little bit of a gregarious character, would say what he wanted, got in, you know, messes with a couple of the media, had some things go against him and the Lions through their dysfunction. It was very difficult to see Sue staying there. And but there's a guy they mentioned on the broadcast. He's 34 years old now. Like, that just feels like yesterday that he was sort of a baby faced guy getting drafted in the top three. But he was going to make life hell for quarterbacks. And he was putting some work in. There's Antoine Winfield Jr., right? A son of a phenomenal NFLer also. And I thought Jason Pierre-Paul, whose minutes were kind of limited, but you forget he's there sometimes. And that's in addition to I mean, obviously they had three interceptions. You know, the Devin White one was big because remember Devin White had another one that was called back because of a penalty. So yeah, like it's very, you know, it's got some names that you recognize, but those guys aren't exactly in the prime of their career. Sue's older, Winfield Jr. is younger. But boy, you know, I try not to anticipate too much going into next weekend. I think they have to be better than they were. I think they have to tackle better. I think they have to scheme better. They have to do a lot of things better to tackle the Green Bay Packers, because I have to believe the Packers are sitting there at halftime of that game going, again, you know, the confidence and the self-confidence and a little bit of the ego comes into play, and the Packers were looking going, neither of these teams are going to beat us, not playing like they're playing right now. And I think the Buccaneers, because of Brady as opposed to Breeze, were the only one of those two teams that can give Green Bay a go at Lambeau next week. But the defense, you know, they held really well, in the second half. Remember, they could never quite put Washington away the week before with a, you know, rookie quarterback being thrust into the spotlight in Heinicke. But I thought they were excellent yesterday, but they may need to be even more excellent if they're going against Aaron Rodgers and the Packers next week at Lambeau.
They're certainly going to need offensively more from their stars. Something, I guess, that you can put in contrast to the defenses. So erudite compared there, but you got players like Gronk, Brown, Evans, Godwin. All four of them accounted for 60 yards combined. Now, it was the second stringers, certainly in terms of profile and status. So Leonard Fournette, the much maligned ex-Jag, stepping up once again. That's back-to-back weeks now that he's had an important and a big game. Ronald Jones picked up a fair amount of yardage as well. Between them, they had, I think, 125 yards on the ground. That tag team, Scotty Miller, a clutch play. So they got the supporting cast to take care of business. And as we referenced, it wasn't vintage Brady by any stretch, but combined, they got the job done. In contrast to the Packers, and let's talk about them now as we look at that championship matchup in a bit more detail. They were ruthless, really, weren't they? And the Rams were obviously a little bit short stacked because Aaron Donald wasn't anywhere remotely resembling fit. He was on the field for just over 50% of his snaps, Greg, which is severely, significantly lower than normal. And his impact was completely diminished. That face marks penalty was born of frustration, I think, that he wasn't where he needed to be. And that no doubt had an impact. The Davante Adams, Jalen Ramsey matchup, the much vaunted, was a non-starter, really. They only squared off against each other three times, I think, in the whole game. And the Packers, efficient when they needed to be in the air, but they got the job done really on the ground, 188 yards on the ground. And it was three different players contributing, obviously Aaron Jones in the mix, but AJ Dillon, Jamal Williams as well. And then maybe that's the most terrifying part as far as their prospective opponents are concerned of this Packers performance, the way they completely neutralized that Rams defense. Didn't manage a sack on Aaron Rodgers. I think it was one hit was the final line there. It was a very controlled performance on both sides of the ball from Green Bay.
Really was. They were downright frightening. And I'm thinking about the Packers as I'm watching, you know, both the games on Sunday and thinking, you know, and I know we'll get to the Mahomes injury, which is such a massive story, but boy, is this already in people's minds, Green Bay's Super Bowl to lose? Like, sometimes the stars, you know, align against you. And I think that's happened for a few times. The last few seasons for Aaron Rodgers, really, I'm not even counting his injury season where he tried to come back really late in the year and just wasn't the same. And they've obviously been, you know, they've been whipped in, you know, playoff games, NFC title games, that Atlanta Falcons team that went to the Super Bowl and had the 28-3 lead on the Packers. They annihilated Green Bay
right
in the title game. San Francisco, you know, that was a second round knockout. Forget what the final score was. That was, you know, that was two prize fighters in the ring and the 49ers just coming out and bludgeoning Green Bay. So
right.
It looks different this year. It does. Mm. And I know, you know, I think we've done on, you know, on this show and in other conversations, we talked last year about how the Packers, who were 13-3 last year, not going into the playoffs, didn't feel like it. Some describe them as one of the poorest 13-3 teams ever. I mean, there wasn't a lot of competition in their division. Minnesota, Chicago, and Detroit were all spinning their wheels last year. You can make the case they still are in some ways. So I don't know that anybody, you know, it's not quite the AFC East with the Patriots in their prime and the Bills, Jets, and Dolphins all stumbling and bumbling into each other. But Green Bay's had six games out of 16 most years that they, when Rodgers is healthy, that they can count on winning four. And obviously they swept this year and were 6-0. So, yeah, the running game, the dual threat is big, and it's big against Tampa. And Tampa had some struggles with Alvin Kamara, eventually caught up to him. And then that game gets away from the Saints, and they have to go away from Kamara as just, you know, a running back that can gain yards. But guess what? A lot of the reason that they were running the ball was because of the deficiencies and inefficiencies of Drew Brees. No such issue with 35-year-old Aaron Rodgers next week. So the balance on offense, you know, Adams is their big threat, quite obviously. But yeah, that the game broke open with the touchdown to Alan Lazard, who is getting separation from guys when he cuts across the middle. He's faster than people give him credit for. I wonder if he could be a number one receiver on some other teams that don't have Devontae Adams on them. So, and Green Bay, even, you know, the use of the tight ends always been a thing with the Packers. We can go back 25, 30 years and talk about, you know, Bubba Franks and Mark Chmura and Keith Jackson. It's a little less prominent on this particular team, but nonetheless, they've got weapons galore and a healthy favorite against Tampa, and they deserve it.
Of course, the biggest defeat of the Packers season, though, was against Tampa Bay, and it was certainly a Tampa Bay Bucs, as we've seen and said on the show many times over the last 6-7 weeks, one that is getting stronger and stronger and stronger. Ironically, much like a Belichick Patriots team that just seems to get better as the season goes on, by and large, and certainly offensively, this Tampa Bay side is doing exactly that. So there is cause for optimism in the Tampa Bay camp, and I guess cause for concern with the Packers that the Bucs will look at that blueprint, look how they took down. It wasn't a close call, 38-10, Gregory. They blew him away. Mm-hmm. They'll look at that and think they've got more than a fighting shot here.
Oh, I do. But I think, you know, and I don't want to, it's difficult to read too much into one game. And in playoffs, you do that sometimes. Any kind of knockout tournament, you know, we could be talking about soccer and the World Cup and the Euros. And if somebody looks great one particular game in the round of 16, we always assume, well, you know, now they're firing on all cylinders. But sometimes, you know, you can beat a team 4-0 in the round of 16 and think, well, you know, they'll just score all those goals again. And it's hard. It's hard to be really consistent when you're playing against the best in the world. I will tell you, like, you know, if we're talking about the how much Green Bay is favored by in the game, I've seen 4 points, 4.5 points right now. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we all know, Nat, that Vegas knows far more than you and me and all of us watching and listening combined about where to set the line. But they just seem to be tempting you to take the Packers. It just that game could get out of hand on Tampa Bay, and Tom Brady doesn't get blown out in the playoffs too much. It's happened a couple times. The Ravens have gone into Foxborough, and really, when we think back, the Jets, the Rex Ryan, Mark Sanchez Jets did a number on them in the playoffs at Foxborough 1 year. But I don't. Four seems really low. I would have set that line at about 7.5, just because I look and see where Green Bay's at right now, and maybe that'll climb up. But the Packers just feels like their time. It feels like now. It feels like it's, you know, a decade later, they're ready to go back to the Super Bowl after we all assumed they'd go back constantly. I mean, what was that? Aaron Rodgers' second full year as a starter when they go and beat Pittsburgh in Dallas. Maybe it was his third year as a starter, barely, since Brett Favre's departure. Brett Favre had so many departures from Green Bay, Nat, I can't keep track of the ball. So again, to go back to music. This is like the Who breaking up and getting back together. And this is the final tour. There's only two of us left. We're going out there for the last time. I mean, they did that when I was 10 years old. So
what
I don't know.
Yeah. Favre going out like, I'm just trying, because he went out blazing, didn't he? I suppose that's the difference, that not on his own terms, it says he didn't go out with a ring, but I feel like he went out. Went out blazing, went out as very much in character, as the type of performance we'd expect from Favre.
Well, was it? I'm trying to remember, because I'm at the game. Was Minnesota, was that overtime loss his last year? I feel like maybe.
Yeah, it was. And he forced. Oh, did he have one more after that?
I wonder about that. We can do that on the fly and figure that out. Yeah, but yeah. I remember thinking at the time, well, you know, if that's as close as you can get, you're in overtime. You don't count on, remember how good Adrian Peterson was at that point in time. You don't count on Adrian Peterson not being able to, you know, to handle things for you. Yeah, he came back one more year, and I see him as 5-8 as a starter. So he came back one more time after that Saints-Colts Super Bowl with the Vikings, it didn't go quite as well at the age of 41. But, you know, the point is made. It's Green Bay just feels – they just feel like they're running on all cylinders right now. And again, when we flip to the AFC, boy, you know, a healthy Mahomes against Rodgers might be the dream matchup. It's hard to think that, you know, we don't want Tom Brady or the amazing story of the Buffalo Bills in the Super Bowl. Tampa Bay would get to play in their own stadium. But I think we look right now and think Green Bay, Kansas City, if Mahomes is fully healthy, that's probably the matchup most neutrals want and maybe expect right now.
We'll get to the AFC in a tick. Just a couple more both teams, actually. The Rams looking forwards with question marks about the quarterback position. For the record, you and I, golf apologist trademark. Yeah. And he'd certainly stepped up, I think, impressively in this game when he was clearly banged up and it was affecting his technique, it's affecting his output. The week before, he was a lot more composed and together, but the Rams collectively as an offense were disjointed. They were going three and out scoring. It was very boom or bust and not enough impact with the boom. So, you know, curious here, because I wonder if Goff had stunk the joint out, whether that might have made the decision easier. There's a lot of rumblings, and we've been hearing from a couple of different sources how big Sean McVay is on John Wolford. Now, that's quite a fanciful jump, and let's, you know, put the fiscal component of this to one side for a minute, because they paid Goff some serious dollar, right? But that story is buzzing around quite a lot, and Wolford offers something that Goff doesn't, not just in his mobility either, but in terms of his ability to read the game quickly. Jason Bell was on the show a few weeks ago talking about the speed of thought fits very, very well with Sean McVay. And that's, I guess, been one of the fundamental complications really with the Goff-McVay marriage, is that Goff, like Andy Reid, and we're going to celebrate his brilliance in a moment, is one of these great innovators that loves this complexity. He's so good that he makes the complexity seem simple. And Goff just isn't that player. He's not that kind of player. He can't, for all his attributes, he throws a great ball. He's got a decent deep ball. He is, you know, relatively mobile, if not a dual threat quarterback. He is typically fairly protective of the ball, although, of course, not this season. And that's been another cause for concern for McVay. But he doesn't have that speed of thought, anticipation, that a different quarterback combined with McVay would be electrifying to see. So I wonder what the Rams do, Greg, going forward.
Yeah, I think they're going to stand pat for the time being. I think they see this season as a work in progress. They were in the Super Bowl two seasons ago in the 2018 season, going into the calendar year 2019. I thought they were the best team not to make the playoffs last year. There's always one of those. This year, you could certainly make the case it was Miami with their record, and it wasn't anybody coming out of the NFC. But there's always, and though they added an extra team this year, but they didn't last year, and the Rams would have been that seventh seed going to the playoffs. So they haven't fallen off the map. I think unless, and I know there's going to be quarterback movement. It's something we'll be talking about over the next couple months. And really what Deshaun Watson is asking, if indeed all that is accurate, and he has absolutely positively played his last game with the Houston Texans.
Yeah. What do you think about that? Because we were told as recently as a week ago, no chance, forget it. It's one of the most absurd rumors doing the rounds. And suddenly in the space of a week, some Shefty was tweeting about it yesterday. I mean, some serious insiders are saying, This could be the end of the road. That's incredible.
Well, it is, and those for most teams, it would need to be money in, money out to make a Deshaun Watson acquisition work, given what he makes now on his second contract. That's going to be really intriguing. But I agree with you. Here's what I agree with. I like Goff enough to move forward. I like, you know, Wolford can sit there and be that backup and maybe can give you some juice and maybe can give you a spark sometimes. I think you got to be really careful. I think there's many teams that have sort of held on to quarterbacks in that middle realm, or maybe that, you know, second to third tier. I thought the Bears did it with Jay Cutler. I think Dallas did it with Tony Romo, where the guy is good enough that you're willing to, you know, take the off week and move forward, because you know the potential's there to win between 10 and 12 games. And if you give that up and it's the wrong decision, then you're languishing in mediocrity. And then as well, you know, the Rams have a good enough roster. Like, the Rams cannot, and obviously it would, you know, really take the rose off McVay, cannot be a team that ends up being, you know, 4-12, 5-11. They're too good. They're way too talented on defense. I would say as well about Saturday, We talked about player absences in the other game, in the NFC game with the Saints. No Cooper Kupp was a factor.
Right, right.
I don't know that it changes the outcome. I would say that it didn't, but that's a real reliable weapon for Jared Goff, and he wasn't there. So it creates an overemphasis on Robert Woods. It makes going to the tight end, Tyler Higbee, a more frequent thing. But the Packers know that. They know that going in. They are well aware of that during the game itself. So I like where the Rams are. Remember also, just speaking, Rams-centric, it looks like they're going to lose their defensive coordinator, Brandon Staley.
Yeah, right.
To the LA Chargers. So he goes across, potentially go across town and coach Justin Herbert. Staley's the defensive coordinator, but who they bring in as an OC could be really, really important after the Chargers jettisoned Anthony Lynn. But I like where the Rams, I like where the Rams are at. And I think also think that you've got to have that big picture about your division. I think what you witness other teams do in those 14 divisions matters as much as what you do. And I think we've got an aging infrastructure in Seattle. Got an older coach there. Pete Carroll, I'm sure, is coming back. But that was a really successful season for the Rams. There's a lot of weird stuff happening with the Niners. What's going to happen with Jimmy G? Arizona couldn't get out of their own way at times this year, even with a healthy, mostly healthy Kyler Murray. They sure could have used him the last week, obviously, and didn't have him. But I think the Rams, there's not just one team that has a successful season and the other 31 don't. Mm-hmm. I'd look at this season, Rams back to double-digit wins, back to the playoffs, go to Seattle and win a playoff game. I think the Rams are back, back to a pace that they're really, really happy with. I wouldn't change too much, to be honest.
Yeah, okay. Fair point. Cam Akers as well, I guess, another bright spark for them. And he figured as we expected he would, but not enough in the end. Let's go to the AFC then. We've got to start with last night's game. Remarkable game in so many ways. Remarkable that the Browns didn't give up. And you mentioned earlier on that Bears game and the Javon Wims drop, which just seemed to be a pivotal moment in that game, because not just the absence of points as a result of the score getting missed, but just the morale disappearing instantly, the deflation that was caused uniformly, I think, across Bears Nation, let alone on the sidelines. Felt that a similar situation might occur when Rashad Higgins would have scored the ball. And what a ridiculous rule this is, Greg. I'm keen to get your thoughts on this, but you roll through the right side of the pylon, out of bounds. It's still your ball. It goes through the back of the end zone. It's a touchback. I still don't understand that rule. It's absurd. But nevertheless, Higgins and the team didn't wilt and die. They fought back. And this seems to be very much the narrative this morning about the Browns. Disappointed, obviously, that their season has come to an end. But uncharacteristically for a Cleveland Browns team, as far back as I can ever remember, quite frankly, there is a sense of pride. There's a sense of optimism. Bring on next season. We lost, but we showed a huge amount of fight, and we showed that we can go toe-to-toe with the very best and not blink. And I thought it was fascinating to see this Browns side. And of course, Mahomes going out gave them an extra bit of edge. But to see this Browns side, to see Baker stepping up in prime time, the biggest game of his life, and not panicking and not blowing it and not throwing it away, but looking composed and assured and already a serious contender next season, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's 19-3 at halftime, and it's the easiest thing. And you might say, well, come on, they're professionals. They make millions of dollars. But it's the easiest thing. We're talking a lot about the human psyche. It's the easiest thing to go in and go, it's not going to happen for us today. And it just takes a few people to feel that way.
Exactly.
And for that to, how would I put it, metabolize physically, for then it to spread throughout the team, okay? And it didn't happen. Like that touchdown drive at the start of the third quarter for the Browns, and that's before the Mahomes injury. So they're not just seeing, okay, we've got a huge break here. We want Patrick Mahomes obviously to be okay, but if he's out of the game, who's kidding who? That benefits us. I mean, I was checking sort of, live betting lines during the game itself, and I was a little bit surprised it didn't lean more in the Browns' favor. That gets to Andy Reid and what he did, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But good heavens, that it was all there for the Browns. I couldn't think of a critical quarterback injury in a playoff game so significant in recent times. We know when Brady had taken over the Patriots in 2001, that Drew Bledsoe had to come in, with Brady injured, and win the AFC title game. And they had to win it in Pittsburgh. I think they were still back at Three River Stadium then, but they had to go and beat the Pittsburgh Steelers in Pittsburgh. And Drew Bledsoe, cold for not playing for weeks on end. Now the backup to Tom Brady, former number one overall pick, accomplished that. Now that was a big ask for Chad Henne to come in and almost do the same with Patrick Mahomes out. But back to the Browns, I loved how they played. I love that they didn't quit. Now, there still has to be hard work. I would figure a franchise like that, and as downtrodden as they were, and the fact, you know, Joe Thomas, legendary lineman, plays there his whole career and never even gets a sniff of a game like that yesterday. The Browns don't even come close to playing relevant, meaningful games in December. They didn't the whole time he was there. Top five, top six pick. The fact that all that is true, I hope the Browns see this for what it is and that it's hard work that gets you there. There's a reason that the Tom Brady's and the Peyton Manning's are who they are, because they do the work in the offseason. And it's not just the physical work, but it's the, is Baker Mayfield going to become, you know, a film nerd like those guys are? Is he going to be in on watching all the video? Are there going to be less commercials and less talk shows and less, you know, back and forth? I think Browns fans have some faith that they have turned the corner. They've got the right coach. They've got the right quarterback. They've got the right coordinators. They've got the right infrastructure. But, you know, 32 teams go into every offseason. And you know, by logic, by math, only 16 could potentially improve. The other 16 should get worse. The Browns have to make sure that they step up, that they challenge, that they want, if they want home games in the playoffs instead of playing two on the road in Pittsburgh and Kansas City. I know it's a different year, not the intimidating crowds. So that probably benefited them, that they're not playing in Kansas City with Arrowhead sold out, and they didn't have to play at Heinz Field in Pittsburgh on a Sunday night with it sold out. But nonetheless, it's a big, big step forward for the franchise. And there's a lot of other AFC teams looking at the Browns saying, well, how do we do that? We're, you know, we haven't made the playoffs in 15 years. We haven't won a playoff game. Teams like the Jets, teams like the Dolphins, teams like even the Chargers, who say, we got to get back to some degree of respectability. But the Bengals are the team in their own state. There's a lot of teams saying we want to do exactly that and take that leap forward, which Cleveland just did.
I think you make so many great points there, that the manner of those drives in particular, you nailed that 77 yarder and then a 75 yarder. So it wasn't that they kept in it and rallied. It was the manner that they did it. The drives, just prototypical domination on those drives, organization, fluency, cohesion, all those things that would nowhere really with the Freddie Kitchens Browns. There were incredible individual acts of brilliance and playmaking ability and flashes and spurts, but it was the fluency of the performance, I think, that was really, really impressive. On the Higgins non-touchdown, we've got to talk about the Sorensen hit that was demonstrably helmet to helmet. With the benefit of replay, I can understand at the time officials maybe not net the speed that this happens, you understandably not necessarily seeing it. And you could flip that as well, of course, with challenges made sometimes, that we're looking at it the fourth, fifth time and thinking, why on earth did they challenge that? And in real time, you can understand why a coach would do that. So it was no doubt helmet to helmet, right? But frustratingly, these plays, and the officials specifically, can't review it. And I wonder if that's something that in the off season, the rules committee will look at. At what point do certain things need to be changed, Greg, in terms of what can be reviewed, what can't, particularly when there's so much on the line here, and whether it's, is it even feasible to say, well, you introduce this in when the playoffs kick in? I understand that not everything can be reviewed. There's subjectivity. There is too much you can introduce in this respect that's going to add to the stop-start nature irrevocably and detrimentally. But in this instance, and we've seen plenty of other bad calls, non-calls in games where so much is riding, that you think there must be a way of working something out here that ends up with the fair outcome.
Well, I think you hit on it. And if you're able to challenge pass interference, and remember, if we're taking that Saints-Rams NFC title game with the egregious non-call, which we all agree it was, now also egregious was the idea that the NFL headed in for the Saints, and you've got politicians in a simpler time, threatening the NFL with lawsuits and court action, and judges are involved, all a little bit ridiculous, but it did change the structure of the challenge. I just think you should be able to challenge any 15-yard penalty. I think you should be able to challenge pass interference. I think you should be able to challenge a helmet-to-helmet hit that doesn't exist or that does exist, roughing the passer. I mean, we saw Josh Allen, give a pretty good, sometimes soccer player, sometimes NBA player flop when he was, shoved, and people, obviously spot it right away. And we get the benefit of video. The officials at the time don't. So, of course, there's somebody that should be – that's the referee's job almost exclusively is to watch for a face mask on the quarterback or a late hit on the quarterback. But to me, I don't want to see challenges come in for holding, offsides, being lined up in the neutral zone. I don't want to see that. But I think any 15-yard penalty, why can you throw a flag and challenge the spot that could be, inches, but it could really matter to get a first down, and coaches wouldn't do it otherwise, but not be able to challenge a scenario like that.
Yeah, because the rule itself to challenge it, right? I mean, if let's just say that had been a situation where Stefanski sees that, is told, from his crew watching, got to challenge that coach. You throw it in. It's a simple review. And it's like, okay, yeah, flag wasn't thrown. It should have been. I don't understand why that's so complex to introduce.
And you're right. And for something, even with, your football on your side of the Atlantic, VAR is more scenario like maybe what the NFL should adopt, in that the referee would get buzzed. And they do get buzzed in the last 2 minutes of games. So there was a really interesting play. I'm sure you spotted it. When the Saints were charged with a hit to Marshawn Lattimore was charged with a hit to the head, but then they just picked up the flag. Well, how did they know? Was that, did they get buzzed from above? Did another official come over and say that wasn't even close to a hit to the head? Like, it would have been a really unfair penalty on the Saints at the given time. So all we want is to get the call right. It's all the audience wants. It's probably all the head coaches want at a certain point in time. And the rule itself, I'd like to see something. And I wonder if it'll happen at some point in time. Now, maybe it's to prevent players from stretching out the ball too much or sort of tossing the ball into the – I mean, you're not allowed to recover a fumble in the end zone from a certain point in unless it's actually you recovering the fumble.
Right.
So, it's not like you can, toss the ball up and have an offensive lineman fall on it in the end zone. But, maybe it's the offensive team's ball back at the 20-yard line. Maybe you're punished in terms of yards for fumbling it through the end zone. The idea of a touchback and a turnover is a really, really rough go. But to your point, Browns shook it off, dusted it away and ended up responding. Remember, a 19-3 game at halftime, I think we're all looking, can I go for a walk in the second half? Like, is this going to be worth watching? Is this with Patrick Mahomes playing the whole game? Is this going to be a 35-9 game at the end of this?
And in your case, Rick, ready to go for a haircut at halftime, I think. But
it only takes me 2 minutes these days. Mm. That's true.
Fair. But of course, they kept her in it. And then, as you've alluded to, things looking really up when Mahomes goes out and Chad Henne comes in. Although Henne comes in and is composed, is together, is looking like a solid vet that he is, right? It's easy to forget these players. And one of the reasons, I guess, why quarterbacks like Chad Henne end up as career backups or long-standing backups is they've got ability. They can put runs together in games. They can put runs of games together where they're playing at the same level as the starters around them. They just can't continue to do it. That's often the biggest problem is the consistency factor of putting it up game on game, week on week, month on month, year on year. And so the idea that a player of Henny's experience coming in and throwing the ball like he's, Ben DiNucci is faintly absurd. Nevertheless, he coughs up crucial turnover and you're thinking, oh boy, here we go. But in the end, Henny came good and was clutch at the end. And the crucial play, the play that we're all going to remember from this game, maybe from this playoffs for years to come, on the 4th-and-1, Andy Reid dialing up a play call that possibly only Andy Reid would have the wherewithal, the guts, the innovation, the creative innovation to do that. But the most unlikely play to call in that situation, and Henne executes it perfectly to Tyreek Hill, and that's game over.
It was unbelievable. The idea, and he obviously, look, he fooled a lot of us. I'm not just banging on Tony Romo. Romo was sure that they were not going to snap the ball and that they were going to punt. And then it's a bit chaotic because maybe if he's thinking that, Tony Romo's a smart football guy. So that means obviously some of the Browns are thinking that also. We saw that ad nauseum with Josh Allen the night before with the Bills. trying to draw offside the Baltimore Ravens time after time after time. So maybe, yeah, Kansas City's not going to give Baker Mayfield and the Browns the ball with a minute and a half left. I know they were out of timeouts at midfield. So the idea is pin them back, trust your defense, make them beat you, make them go 80, 85 yards. So it was really, really surprising. I'll say this, you know, I wondered about the smartness of Patrick Mahomes, not even suiting up that last week. And I know, you know, obviously an injury early in the season, earlier in the last season. So they were very conscious that, you know, you don't want to lose your show pony. But think about this. Patrick Mahomes sits and it's Chad Henne's game in week 17. That's his first start since he was a Jacksonville Jaguar in 2014. So right. He sat in Jacksonville, backed up Blake Bortles. He's on that team that almost went to the Super Bowl as Bortles backup, then comes to Kansas City in 2018. Getting that play, I know you get reps in practice. I know that, but getting an entire game to start, I was thinking about that yesterday. He threw 32 passes against the Chargers in a 38-21 loss, and the result was immaterial. But Nat, honestly, how much could that have helped him just feel in the rhythm, start to build your confidence? Like, I can do this again. The guy's had plenty of NFL starts. He's got 54 NFL results. He's 18-36. But I think we can admit he was on some lousy Dolphins teams and some even lousier Jags teams before they turned the keys over to Blake Bortles. So just getting those reps and being, you know, live bullets against the Chargers in week 17, that may have helped him. And you bring up that play. What about the 14.5-yard scramble that even got them to fourth and one? Who knew Chad Henne had that in him at this point in time? It might have been out of desperation, but people made the comparison to John Elway, right? Around with the Packers tackle in the Super Bowl. That's how much Chad Henne was willing to sacrifice for it.
Yeah, the go get him, as J-Bo would say. Great point you make about week 17, actually. It's really interesting that how the game might have been different. It's how his touch might have been that little bit different if he hadn't had those reps. It's a brilliant point. The Bills now lie in Kansas City's way as they look at retaining the championship. And of course, as we suggested, obviously, so much depends on the fitness of Mahomes, not just the concussion, but the turf toe that he suffered during the game as well. So that's inevitably going to be the talk going into the game. But let's assume that he is fit to start and is able, if not at 100%, certainly to be able to play at something closely resembling the Mahomes that we know and love. It's going to be an intriguing matchup for sure, given the momentum the Bills have going into the championship game that the Chiefs, albeit as champions, don't appear to. The Bills have this sense of destiny about their season for sure, and much like Cleveland, but even more so, they have shaken off years and years of disappointment and dysfunction to get to where they're going. A balanced team on both sides of the ball. Actually, it was their defense that was particularly impressive, of course, at the weekend. The offense, Josh Allen, was out of touch for the first time in a long time. They couldn't really get much rolling with the ground game as well. You look at the Ravens, and it was a point we were talking about on the radio show last night, Greg. The Ravens outgained Buffalo in so many different aspects of the ball game. 340 yards to 220 in terms of total yardage. Time of possession, almost 10 minutes more, the Ravens. Third down efficiency was much stronger. Other key stats as well. So it wasn't a fluent offensive performance by any stretch from the Bills, but it was defensively. They neutralized the Ravens, certainly the ground game. Dobbins and Co. not getting anything rolling there. That put undue and additional pressure on Lamar. And as Chris Brown, beat writer for thebills.com, who joined our radio show last night, told us, it was a masterclass from Leslie Frazier.
It is incredible game plan from Leslie Frazier to bottle up Lamar Jackson. And it's something that's going to be talked about, I think, deep into the offseason in terms of defending Lamar Jackson and forcing him to throw under uncomfortable circumstances. Now, there was a lot there that, the Ravens, Justin Tucker missing two field goals from 46 yards off the post, one on each side. You don't count on those things happening. Everyone will point to the 101-yard interception return from Taron Johnson, and they should. Did that turn the game? Absolutely. But I do wonder if that sort of, you know, I like that phrase, the seeds of doubt were planted in the Ravens' minds with the two Tucker misses to say, this may not go our way. Yeah. Everything felt like it broke their way, and Lamar had all day, all the time to take off with the football against the Tennessee Titans. And he could hand the ball off. And the Ravens D swallowed up Derrick Henry appropriately enough. Like that, to me, that I look back at that game, that Ravens-Titans game, and a week ago Sunday, not as close as the score indicated. That was a dominant playoff performance by John Harbaugh on the road. Yeah. And John Harbaugh knows how to win road games. He always has. He's the all-time leader in road wins for a head coach with 8. That's a ton of games to win away from your own stadium. But yeah, I look at Buffalo and I just see, I see a team that if Patrick Mahomes is the least bit wobbly, if he's the least bit inconsistent, and I might have said this anyway with Mahomes fully healthy and not getting dinged, because remember, he's running a little bit more gingerly before the concussion happened. Where's that at? I mean, we were wondering about his ankle before we knew that his head had hit the turf because he was really wrapped up around the neck. Pretty aggressive tackle in the Browns game. I think this is Buffalo's. I think this is a wonderful opportunity for the Bills to go grab this at Arrowhead Stadium. And I'd be shocked if I don't pick them, regardless of whether Mahomes is healthy or not. I think Buffalo is going to the Super Bowl, and it's going to be an amazing, amazing game on Sunday. And they've proven they can play with the big boys. We did wonder about this. They needed to get that playoff monkey off their back. They couldn't do it last year. They scored 3 points against Jacksonville 3 seasons ago. This might be a Bills Super Bowl team.
That's talk of the, and bringing this full circle, when we started the show talking about Brady and Breeze and looking at the next generation and those battles that we're going to see over the years. And those three quarterbacks, certainly Lamar, Josh Allen and Mahomes, will be figuring for many years to come. But this might turn out to be the best opportunity, particularly, of course, if Mahomes is injured. But as you rightly say, even if he's not right now, the way that this Bills side is motoring. And I guess they'll look at this game, Greg, and think, we didn't play particularly well offensively. We still took care of the business against a Ravens team that was absolutely motoring going into the game. And that's the mark of a championship team, right? When you're not playing particularly well, significantly on one side of the ball, but you still get the win. And in the end, a relatively comfortable win as well. Before we get out of Dodge, let's talk about some of the coaching changes, or coaching appointments, I should say. Because they become a thick and fast, right? So I'm going to line from you on each of them. Firstly, the aforementioned Jags. What an incredible 6 or 7 weeks they've had, right? Because they were sitting second spot in the draft. Is Doug Marrone going to come back for another year? If you're a Jags fan, you're thinking, oh boy, this is pretty bleak. And we've got some promising bright sparks, but we are a long way from home. And suddenly everything turns around. They've got the 1 overall pick, which means Trevor Lawrence. They've got Urban Meyer, one of the most successful college coaches of all time. Fascinating to see what he is able to achieve in the pros. And suddenly Jacksonville are an organization that is trending absolutely in the right direction, a huge amount of positivity. And most importantly of all, they're going to be compelling to watch next season, aren't they?
Oh, phenomenal to watch. I know. And listen, I'm hoping for it just like you are, that the London games happen. You've got potentially 2 Jags visits in the fall of 2021. And if we, again, all are doing our part, all goes well, vaccinations increase. We've got 2 Jacksonville Jaguars home games. I think we agree just on that front, Nat, that we need full stadiums for those games, that I don't think the NFL is coming with the idea of 10,000 people at Wembley. They got to have everybody there. So
I don't know how realistic that's going to be, though, this year. It's a great question, a great point that you know, maybe we need to elaborate on another time. But I wonder, given where we're at now in January, and they've got to make this call, you know, certainly in the next 4 months, you would think, right? I don't know. It's a big call. But
what a thrill for London football fans if they get to see Trevor Lawrence in his rookie season 2 different times, as it were, with the Jags coming over. So, I agree with you about the positivity. And that division is so in flux. There's what the Texans do with Deshaun Watson. Are the Titans, you know, standing pat? Are they happy where they're at? It's hard to believe Indianapolis. I didn't like the Colts all year long, so it's hard to believe they ended up winning 11 games and really did push Buffalo in their playoff game. But what does Philip Rivers do? So there's a big X factor there. And does he want to keep playing? But do the Colts want to move on and look at somebody else? So I'm real curious to see the impact for Urban Meyer, since that's you asked about the coach. And I don't know what to compare this situation to. To me, it's not quite like Nick Saban, deciding to leave LSU and come to the and come to the Miami Dolphins, because Saban had, you know, a taste of being on a staff in the NFL before. It's not like Pete Carroll, who had a couple scenarios that didn't work out for him necessarily great with the Patriots and the Jets. And then, you know, absolutely rising up USC. I was a USC fan from a little kid in the late 70s. So I've always watched that program. He comes in, replaces a guy named Paul Hackett, and absolutely makes USC, you know, the most compelling sports team, period, in Los Angeles. They were a bigger deal than the Lakers, the Dodgers. They really were. USC football. And Pete Carroll made that happen, comes to Seattle, and has had a tremendous run of success. He might be a Hall of Fame coach in the NFL. And many people said, oh, it's a retread. He's tried it before. It's not his thing. So I'm fascinated to see how Urban Meyer goes. I know we were talking with JP Shadrick yesterday, and I agree. You know, lower the expectations. If you get off the mat and you're 7-9, 8-8, that's big progress for this Jacksonville team. Yeah. That's really decimated their roster by, you know, trading for futures a fair bit in the last 3 years.
Yeah. I wonder as well if Urban Meyer coming into the NFL in 2021 as opposed to 10 years ago is going to make a significant difference, certainly in his favor, right? Just the way that the pro game has changed and priorities have changed, and that acclimatization, as we're seeing from individual players and quarterbacks most notably, but also receivers, how quickly they can acclimatize to the NFL now compared to back in the day. I wonder whether that's going to make it a more straightforward transference. We mentioned Brandon Staley at the Chargers, Arthur Smith at the Falcons. So the Titans, well, to your point, they're going to have to have a think about how they follow off Arthur Smith. He's had a huge amount of success, obviously, with the Titans in the last couple of years, that is perhaps sometimes misunderstood, or his role, I think, has been undervalued because of Derrick Henry's visible contribution. What he's done with the passing game, the rehabilitation of Ryan Tannehill, the balance that he's managed to imbue there, he's going to be a hard act to follow. What do you make of his appointment at the Falcons, though? That's an interesting choice for them, I think. And I guess the Matt Ryan question comes firmly into view.
Yeah, I think it does too. He, you know, going from not being able to get where Marcus Mariota, where he needed to be. It's a weird thing how sometimes, you know, we were talking about Goff, and you could link, Goff's always going to be linked with Wentz because they were 1-2 in the draft, same as Luck and RG3 were. But I think about that with Jameis Winston and Marcus Mariota, and both players really, you know, just not being able to make things click for the Buccaneers and the Titans respectively. So they get found money in Ryan Tannehill, who they really didn't bring in, I don't believe, to compete for the starting job at the time, but just to give them depth. And Tannehill had not played well enough in Miami, really, to justify walking into a locker room and being that particular starting quarterback. So, yeah, it's going to be really interesting with Arthur Smith there, because he should get a lot of credit for emphasizing the run. It seems like, you know, the running back is almost coming back into vogue as being really important. And if you don't have a superstar running back, you better have, like the Browns have, that 1-2 punch. And it's what the Chiefs were missing yesterday against the Browns, obviously, with injuries in their backfield. So I'm real curious to see what Atlanta does. Given, again, you know, that division, I think Tampa stands pat, and a lot of their guys are back, including a 45-year-old Tom Brady. But New Orleans has calls to make. Carolina looks set with Teddy Bridgewater. But I don't think the Falcons have to languish too far at the bottom of that division if they can, you know, make the right moves and transition from Matt Ryan in the next year or two to another quarterback that's capable.
Robert Saleh, the other appointment we'll talk about, to the Jets. If we're putting some kind of power rankings on coordinators or coaching candidates, he's been right at the top, I guess. Surprisingly, didn't get a gig last time out after driving the 49ers to the Super Bowl, if not getting them over the line as defensive coordinator there. He's somebody that has been often talked up as a head coaching candidate for a number of years, and it was inevitable he's going to get a job this time around. So it's a coup for the Jets to have landed him, and they've got a really exciting season and future ahead. But if we're talking about teams trending in the right direction, a huge amount of draft capital. They've got 2 first round picks in the 2021 draft, I think 11 in total, and a number of those within the top 3 rounds. So whilst this is a franchise, a roster that needs a fair amount of overhauling, certainly with Saleh being able to preside over a defense, if you can get even close to the one he had in San Francisco, they're going to be competitive, and they can add a lot of other key offensive pieces around. Do they, I mean, following the same question through, given the capital they've got, seems to be the conventional wisdom they're going to move away from Sam Darnold, but I wonder whether they might give him one last hurrah, look at next year as a rebuild year, invest that capital elsewhere, maybe even parlay some of that capital into even more and cover a lot of ground quickly.
Yeah, it's something, and I think they need to, because Buffalo's only going to get better and stabilize, and Miami should be getting better as well. Again, not everybody takes the same progression. Some teams step up, make the playoffs, and all of a sudden, boom. Buffalo, remember, made the playoffs that year against Jacksonville in McDermott's first year, and were right down to being in a position where they drafted Josh Allen the year after that, after the 2018 season. So it's one of those scenarios where you've got to, you know, you got to be certain about where your goals are. And I do wonder for the Jets. I think it'll take a few years still to dig out of this. I would have drafted Darnold one overall. I still think there's great football left for him to play. I would like to see how he works himself out. But I also think you trade that number two pick. If somebody, you know, whoever wants to go up and take one of the two quarterbacks from BYU or from Ohio State, trade that pick for as much as you can get. Because I think the Jets know that they've got that regret there. They drafted Jamal Adams four picks ahead of Patrick Mahomes, six picks ahead of Deshaun Watson. They wouldn't have had to draft Sam Darnold the next year and trade up to go into the top three if they'd made the right call. And no knock on Jamal Adams, nice player. And they actually did quite well in moving him along to the Seahawks at the right time. But yeah, it's going to be intriguing to see what they do at number two. And boy, there was still some high hopes for Adam Gase too. That's the weird thing, is the Jets have tried this before. I feel like, yeah, this is the right hire, but you never know. You think about the lack of hype for Doug Peterson. There were questions in Buffalo about Sean McDermott, and, you know, even Andy Reid in Kansas City. It's like, oh, are we just getting somebody that just wore out his time in Philadelphia? Or should we be going more innovative, younger? And, you know, it's very difficult to judge these things, but the Jets look like they've got a guy that is going to be very, very inspired. And as you mentioned, they've got the draft capital, and God knows the fan base has been waiting long enough to be good again.
Yeah, big time. It's good to see, I think, a team like the Jets are trending in the right direction. Despite all the dysfunction and the disappointment they've had, I think you need big market teams like that to have big characters. And the whole Adam Gase thing, as we were hearing on our show last night, on our radio show, was just painful to watch that unraveling. Strange they didn't make a call and pull the plug on him earlier on in the season. So you think the Bills are going to make the Super Bowl, Greg? Who are they going to be playing? Let's leave on a prediction.
I don't know how Green Bay loses at home. I'm shocked it's Aaron Rodgers' first NFC title game at home. He's 1-3 in NFC championship games, Nat. And there have been some stumbles, obviously. They lost to the Giants when they looked destined as a 15-1 team. There was a lot of talk that year. Their only loss was at Arrowhead against kind of a lousy Kansas City Chiefs team. But there was talk about them being an unbeaten team that year. They were clear odds-on favorites. I think that's the 2011 season to win the NFL. To win the Super Bowl and be obviously a first seed in the conference, which they were, and the Giants, Tom Coughlin, Eli Manning go in and they just dominated Green Bay. So there's been so many false starts for Aaron Rodgers. It's hard for me not to see Aaron Rodgers playing on Super Bowl Sunday. And, you know, I does Tom Brady go quietly into the night? No, not in this game. He'll be back next year as Tampa Bay quarterback. But I think we've got a Packers-Bills Super Bowl. So someone put it yesterday, AFC Siberia against NFC Siberia. We'll take it. In a weird year where the fans don't have to worry about being cold, those two cold weather fan bases could have gone down to Tampa, got some sun, 83 temperatures at game time. You know, what could have been?
Oh, well, we wouldn't take it any other way, as you say, in the year that we've had. Brilliant stuff, Greg. We'll know in this time next week, we'll know exactly who is going to be playing in the Super Bowl. And we are going to be rolling out a lot of content as we build up to the Super Bowl. And you can guarantee that Mr. Brady will be a part of that. So we'll check in with you very soon. But for the time being, thanks, man. Always appreciate and love your insight. Good to see you.
Great weekend. I loved reviewing it with you, Nat. Always do. Thanks so much.
Take care, bro. Lovely stuff from Greg Brady. He will be back soon. You can guarantee it because, as I alluded to, as we wrapped things up, there is plenty more coming your way before this season is done and dusted. Thursday, we are dropping our championship preview. We're also going to be dropping Edge Rush this week too. Producer Ollie and I back for a bit more action with that as well. And as we roll in to Super Bowl week. Lots and lots of bonus pods, extra content, stuff on our social channels at the NC Show, incidentally, is going to be dropping, getting you set. So there is a lot more to come before we wrap up this season. And hey, as we were alluding to, plenty more beyond that as well. The show stays on track. The show goes on. And you are right there with us. It's great to have you along for the ride. We'll be back with the championship game previews later on this week. See you then.